This is comedian Daryl Lennox making his debut on Mr. Media. Fantastic man, medium pleasing voice to the ear, but still a nice guy. And here's a tip. You can try to get Mr. Media to do a sex tape and just sell the audio, and it might work. It probably won't.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to a trio of legendary touring and super studio rock musicians. Guitarist Adam Falcon, bassist Doug Wimbush, and drummer Keith LeBlanc. Stick around. This is one show that I can guarantee you will rock. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. Give it a test drive today at stitcher.com/mrmedia, Mr. Media. I love this free radio app, and I think you will too. Stitcher.com/mrmedia. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of music fans who just hit the mother load in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. We've taken this show to a lot of interesting places thanks to the internet, including the homes of the rich and famous, a restaurant balcony where a belly dancer wandered into an interview and shook her assets for us, the home kitchen of a TV chef, a Playboy Playmate's bed, and at least one magic castle. Today's show extends the franchise a little further, as Mr. Media has been invited into the Hartford, Connecticut loft of bass guitarist Doug Wimbush, where a remarkable rehearsal will take place right before our eyes. Joining us are Wimbush and his friends, drummer Keith LeBlanc, and guitarist Adam Falcon. Separately, these three men have worked with, get ready for this list, the Rolling Stones, Living Color, Whitney Houston, Roberta Flack, the Bee Gees, Peter Gabriel, Eric Clapton, the original Sugar Hill Rhythm Section, Mel Mel, Grandmaster Flash, and the Furious Five, Tackhead, Jeff Beck, Joe Satriani, Herb Alpert, Annie Lennox, Madonna, Carly Simon, Al Green, Billy Idol, George Clinton, and James Brown. They're together today for their second and final tune-up before playing at Miami Beach's annual Art Deco Weekend and Music Festival, January 18th to 20th. It will be the first time Falcon has ever played publicly with Wimbush and LeBlanc, and it is sure to be an amazing time. Now you can get all the who, what, where, when details at artdecoweekend.com. And you can see even more of Doug Wimbush in March and April when Living Color reunites to tour the U.S. and Europe. Now, regular Mr. Media viewers will certainly recognize our friend Mr. Falcon, who's making his third appearance on the show today and was kind enough to suggest this rare session with his friends. And the guys will even perform a pair of songs, so stick around for that. So, Doug, Keith, and Adam, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hi. What's up, Bob?
Great to be here. Good to see you again.
How you guys doing? Nice to see you. Nice to meet you, Keith and Doug. Doug, thanks for letting us into your place.
Welcome to Nova Sound Studios. This is the spot.
Is that right? It's very cool. We got to see a little more of it as we were setting up the camera, so it looks like a very nice place, so we appreciate you having us in.
Thank you.
How's that drink coming for me? Is anyone getting on that? Never mind. We'll work on hospitality details later. So, Adam, I'm going to start with you since we know you so well. I wonder if you could maybe introduce us to your friends a little bit and tell us how you guys connected.
Wow. Well, first of all, to my right, Doug Wimbush, bass player and overall nice guy. And to his right, Keith LeBlanc, drummer, another overall nice guy. And both of these guys, actually, I've known of them before they knew who I was. You know, these guys, like you started off by saying, these guys are like legendary musicians. I mean, they were there in the forefront of the early hip-hop and rap. And so I always knew who both of these guys were. And then a mutual friend of ours, Dave Hogarty, he and I had connected through one of the media. I think it might have been Facebook or MySpace, whatever, at the time. And I found out that he had known both of these guys and was a big friend of big fan of Tackhead. So Dave and I started corresponding, and then he told me about how Doug has this annual show called Wimbash somewhere in Connecticut. Where is that?
It's right here in Hartford, Connecticut.
In Hartford, Connecticut. Every year they do this amazing Wimbash festival. Actually, that's what we'll be doing down in Miami is a Wimbash as an offshoot of the Art Deco weekend. Anyway, Dave had told me about the festival, and Doug was kind enough to let me come up and do my thing, and then through that we connected. And then one year they were doing a Tackhead reunion, mm-hmm. and Keith played, and a good buddy of mine had known Keith, and he introduced me to Keith, and so here we are.
Very cool. And you guys have not played together before this time you rehearsed a week or so ago?
I guess you could say officially the first time. I mean, last year we had gone down, and these guys, again, it was a Wimbash, and we sort of jammed together, but it wasn't really like something that we said, hey, let's get together and play. You know, but we just got up on stage, and I, you know, tried to follow along, you know. and I was there.
Yeah,
you did quite well. Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, I don't imagine Adam struggling.
That's it. That's what it was. You know, the Falcon was flying.
And did I see, Doug, that there's another Wimbash? Is it summertime?
Well, there's a few of them that take place over the year. Okay. There's the first starts off in January, Miami, for Art Deco Weekend, which we've attached ourselves to it. This year, there's 3 days. It's the 18th, 19th, and 20th. Right after that, we follow that up with one that's attached to the New Orleans Jazz Festival. And on the second weekend when that takes place, or more or less the first weekend of May, I believe we will be having another Wimbash at one of the clubs in New Orleans. Then we do one in Cabinet de Dominican Republic, right around the same time. Right after that, we go to Dominican Republic and do one which is attached to an organization that I work with that helps develop children's education in Dominican Republic. It's called the Dream Project. Okay. So we're doing that. Living Color is scheduled to come and help out on that one this year. And after that, we have one back again here in Hartford. You know, we're looking to probably get it over to Bushnell Park and have it attached to the local newspapers here, the Hartford Current and the Advocate, the Hartford, New Haven, Northampton Advocates. The local music magazines are supporting the Wimbash next year. It's the 10th year anniversary, and it's also connected with the month of September is Connecticut Music Month. So the Wimbash will be the jump off of a month-long celebration of different bands that will be playing throughout the state.
Cool. Nice to see somebody doing something nice for Hartford. Half my family is up there, so.
You know, this is there's a lot of work that needs to be done up here. So if you have any extra friends that want to come up here and assist in bringing some sunshine first and some other human beings to this place, we'll take it.
All right. We'll keep that in mind.
All right.
So Keith, tell me. So you and Doug played together in Tackhead. Did you know each other before that?
Yep. I met Doug around 1978, and I was lucky. His band, he was in this band called Wood, Brass, and Steel, which was probably the funkiest band in Connecticut. They were legends, and their drummer saw me playing, and he had to leave the band, so he got me an audition with him, and that's how I met Doug. And then from there, I played with them for about six months or so, and Sylvia Robinson called from Sugar Hill Records looking for Doug and Skip McDonald. And so I kind of went up there with them by default. And we just hit it off and played, you know, played in different combinations over the years. It's always comfortable to play with Doug, and Adam just fit in perfectly. So it's been fun, these rehearsals, really.
And Adam, let me come back to you, because I want to mention about Art Deco Weekend again. And I know you played last year, because that was the last time we spoke officially. Tell folks a little about it, if they don't know, you know, what it's about and why it's a good time.
Wow. As far as I know, Art Deco Weekend is something that they put together in celebration of all the architecture up and down,
Ocean Drive.
Ocean Drive.
And
the whole Art Deco district. And it's a big celebration, because some of the buildings and the hotels, they go back quite a number of years, and the architecture is just beautiful. And so they pick a time every year where they celebrate the architecture of the buildings in this part of Miami. And they not only is it the buildings, but they have this parade where they have a lot of the old cars from the early periods, and it's a whole theme. It's almost like a theme.
Big turnout, big crowds.
Oh yeah. It's almost in a sense like a Mardi Gras kind of thing, you know, but not as big yet. People it's a whole, all up and down the street, there's vendors and people who just attend, and there's outdoor, a lot of outdoor music going on and booths and things like that. So there's quite a number of people that attend this.
Yeah, the police even break out special cars. They've got like a pink police car, and these 50s cars, police cars, and they break all those out, and the old motorcycles. It's really good. Big deal. They close off the whole area,
and I'm guessing, or maybe I know this, that you guys are, I know you're going to play on the 19th formally together, but will you be popping up in other combinations during the course of the 3 days, and or we be playing with different people?
It's definitely been known to happen.
Yeah, it's definitely been known to happen. The first evening, the 18th, is a jazz theme component going on, and Adam is going to participate with some of those lovely folks that's participating on that day. As you know, the 19th is going to be the day where it's going to wiggle a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The wiggling will start. And so we'll start wiggling on Saturday, keep our wiggle on. And then Sunday we will modify for Sunday brunch wiggling.
Ah.
And then we will move and venture in and out based on how the weather and the surface. Now we'll go Sunday. Sunday will be some homegrown local wiggling from Swinello, one of my favorite bands out of the Florida area.
Yeah.
And they're going to close it out. And after that, we're going to kind of like go back to where we left off last year, which we did Art Deco Weekend, and then we went over to a club called The Stage, and we kind of like jammed up. We're not going to go to The Stage this year. We're going to stay on the same stage right after Swinello plays, and then we're going to take that same frequency and vibe, and we're all going to jam out. And at that point, there'll be Will Calhoun will be there, Vinks is there, there's the whole community. DJ Rampage Global is going to be in there to rock the house, so it's going to be a nice family affair. And suntan lotion and hot sauce are the two key items that we're taking donations of for those that are freshly off the boat that need a tan, and the other ones that need a little bit of extra percolation. That's what the hot sauce is going to do.
All right, and everybody who had money on Doug saying they were going to get, he was going to get his wiggle on, you lost.
All right, use your creative imagination. Miami Beach, Ocean Drive, the sun. And for all the snowbirds that come down there, they just start wiggling as soon as they arrive at Fort Lauderdale or Miami Airport. They don't even know what's going on. You start wiggling out of the winter clothes and putting on the nice summer clothes.
I'm thinking a lot of bikinis and, sadly, probably a lot of Speedos, too.
Well, we're not that far. We're going to be set up right on the beach. So the atmosphere is really cool. You know, you have the right on Ocean Drive, and then there's the point in place where there's the Art Deco building and their area. Their home base. We're right in a nice, very cool area, so there'll be bodies lie stretched out on the beach enjoying the actual sun, and we'll be providing the frequencies of entertainment.
Frequencies of entertainment while you get your wiggle on. I like it. Okay.
All of this is 2013. That's what we're here for. Keeping it 100 and life is beautiful.
So Adam, didn't you warn them about me? Did you not do your job there and tell them?
No, I just told them who you were, and that was it.
Okay. All right. We'll just see how far we can push it. Okay. So you guys are going to do two songs for us today. Let's talk about the first one. This is going to be Stealing. Now, there's a lot of, obviously, with the backgrounds that the three of you have, separately, together, there's a lot of songs you could choose to play here today. Why Stealing? Tell us something about this.
Well, quite honestly, these are the first two songs we've rehearsed so far up until when you called. So the law of average of us being able to interpret what we've done since last week is more memorable for us elder musicians at this particular moment. No, actually, it's that's kind of like really realistically what's happening. Stealing, the hook is stealing in the name of the Lord. It says it all in itself right there.
And that's an old Tackhead tune.
That's an old Tackhead tune from Keith. You can chime in.
Yeah, that's an old Tackhead tune from way, way back. And Adam came in with a chart of it, the first rehearsal.
It's unbelievable, actually.
Yeah, we had to get a picture of it because I think we've given out two MVPs for Tackhead. He got the third one. He came in with a chart for Airborne Ranger, which was a Tackhead tune that we're doing. But Stealing is... It's commentary on the radio evangelist, television evangelist gone wrong. Is that about it?
Continue. You're doing a great job.
Gone wrong. That's about it.
Go down to Wormhole a little bit more. Yeah. it's Saturday, so we can talk about it. Right. You know, but it's basically that. It talks about all the things that happens through our life and how people go in and out of different experiences. And the frequency of what we all experience, you know, everybody kind of like comes to a point where we can talk about it. And this is a song that maybe this says something that maybe some people kind of like are like, hey, you're getting a little, you know, it's a little bit too close to the mark. You're going to hell. No, you don't know, but it's more.
We're doomed.
We're doomed. It's like, you know, Mayans are going to get you. But the reality of it is, it's the beauty of life is to experience all these things and how, and we need all of these things to balance everything out. And at that particular point where we were with Tackhead, we made a great song called Stealing in the Name of the Lord. We'll do that first. The second song is...
Too late. Is really about polluting the environment and not being able to fix it.
You guys, is Too Late, is that also a Tackhead song, or?
This is where we, even ourselves, find the...
That's a Little Axe song.
That's a Little Axe song.
Skip McDonald.
Yep. Still part of the family.
All DNA. That DNA is right now over in the UK. So
thanks, Skip.
You're gonna have to have a conversation with Skip.
Yeah. Thanks for letting us use your song.
You know, we chose. So it's kind of like the next conversation. Hopefully, will be from Ramsgate with Skip McDonald explaining, and you could ask him saying, you know, hey man, these guys are over here playing your music and we love it. So that's Skip's song, a classic Little Axe song.
Yeah.
And it's all us. We're gonna do our interpretation of it right now on this lovely January 12, 2013.
All right. I hope everybody got a look at the length of the arms on Doug Wimbush. Oh my God! He stretched out and he engulfed the other two guys, and there was still arm left over. Oh my God!
It might be a little bit of an illusion. I'm quite small.
I'm not that much bigger, right?
Yeah, me and Adam are about the same age, so you know gravity is pulling down. Yeah.
Come on, Michael.
He does have long arms.
All right, folks. Well, so the guys are going to play Stealing, and then they're going to play Too Late, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more before we wrap it up.
All right, man. Roberto, see you on the other side.
All right.
Of the groove. All right, Jay, take it away.
All right. Are we ready?
Ready.
Here we go.
Go ahead.
You got it?
Thank you.
Itself, doesn't it?
Right,
it's
right.
Itself. That's it. Two times around it is, I guess.
There it is, like what?
You just play it and then you join in.
That's it, that's it, that's it.
Disco loopies in the
place. Yeah.
That was great, guys. So, judging from what I just saw, I'd say you guys must be pretty happy with the way this is sounding.
How does it sound from your end? How does it translate where you are?
It was great. I was like, I called my daughter in. I turned the sound off, and I said, kid, you got to come in here and hear this, you know. I made her watch with me.
We want to invade, like, basically, we know that you have a hookup with One Direction. So we're going to use the first song, Stealing, as your first mission to break the code, you know, when these kids go to play One Direction, we pop up. So that's what the Bob app does. Yep. The Bob app cracks all the mainstream stuff with the reality of stuff of your mates, your friends. So.
Quality music, yes. Yes. Right. My connection to One Direction is that I saw them on Saturday Night Live and they got about 30 seconds in and I changed the channel. That's my connection to One Direction.
My daughter would have fainted. She would not. You would be banned from the house right now if she knew you did that. No, turn them off right now.
Well, you know. Well,
but
so tell me, Doug, I got to say I am very partial to Living Color. As a matter of fact, to prove it, I dug through and found my original CD, the Vivid. Now, I know you joined the band officially after Vivid, but I know you've been part of the band a lot longer than the guy who played bass on this CD.
Well, you know, it's a whole story that goes with that whole connection. So that's, you know, I've known Vernon for quite some time. We all, me and Keith, you know, we kind of met Vernon kind of like at the same time. And he used to come hang out at the loft. Keith had a loft on 14th Street. And we would all be there. We were all, like, working out of the loft. You know, it's like the musicians' community, you know.
Everybody knew the address.
Everybody knew the address. No doorbell, right? You just, yeah, yo, I'm here. Okay, come on down.
Throw down the key.
You bring any fish sandwiches with you. It was an entrance fee. Hot sauce. That's where the hot sauce comes in. Back to that hot sauce.
All right, back to the hot sauce.
Responsible for Tackhead doing their first gig.
Yep.
Because he came to the loft. And we had gotten a lot of press from somebody in the Village Voice on a record we had just done, Tackhead. And he said, he came in, he said, gee, that press is nice, guys, but can Tackhead do a gig? You know, me and Doug kind of, because it was a studio experiment, you know, I looked at each other and went, that's a good question.
That kind of was a challenge to put Tackhead together. At the same time, Vernon was in search of he was looking to put something together himself, and that was Living Color. It was started off as Vernon Reed's Living Color. But it ended up Living Color, but it all was taking place realistically at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Like this 1983-84 was our connection when I kind of hooked up with, we met Vernon through Ed Fletcher, Duke Booty.
Mm.
So that took place like in 1983 when we did Fletcher's
Vernon
album.
Vernon brought up to Sugar Hill Records, and then I befriended
Vernon, and then I kind of invited him to come up to Sugar Hill and stuff like that. And, you know, we kind of connected, guitar player, bass player kind of vibe, that kind of vibe. You know, we kind of had some conversations, invited him up to Sugar Hill. So that started like in 1983, somewhere like around that time frame. Fast forward the tape, Vernon's every day coming to the spot, hanging out, rapping. Because, you know, the place was like, was a real good community kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of folks came through there. So Vernon would be there. We'd sit down at the table chopping stuff up. Vernon was working at the Village Voice at the time. He was a huge Tackhead fan. He was into he was trying to figure out how we made these records.
Right.
And we would try to explain them to him, but he couldn't get it around his head. You know what I mean? And quite honestly, he knew what it was about, but to explain to him how basic the tools we were using to make these records with was it was like, I gotta see this shit. So anyway, we start. You know, he challenged us to the idea of, well, can y'all make a record? Can y'all play live?
Right.
So that took stages. So fast forward the tape. You know, I'm doing some stuff with Vernon, blah, 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 blah. At that same time, in 84, I get a call from, Jeff Beck. So I hooked up with Jeff Beck at the time. Arthur Baker, we were all working with a producer, Arthur Baker. We met Jeff Beck through Arthur Baker, doing a lot of remixes. Fast forward, I ended up meeting Mick Jagger. I met Mick Jagger, befriended, blah, blah. Ended up, he asked me to, you know, join his band and you know, all kind of lovely things. at that particular time, Vernon had put together a Living Color that was on that record. Because the original Living Color started off with, it was a couple of movements that took place before that set of guys settled. And I was like, yo, I was working with Mick. Mick had asked me about the band. I was like, yo, man, you produce all these blues cats. Why don't we go and check them out down at CBGB? So went down there and checked them out with Jeff Beck and kind of like gave the band a basic co-signing in a sense of reality. And at the end of the day, like it was really,
I didn't even notice that.
Awesome.
Man, I'm so glad, man.
Slowly
tipping. Great grab.
Yeah, the guitar was doing a wiggle.
It was wiggling. So anyway, Vernon had started busting it out with Living Color. Mick had asked me about the band. I suggested that he, you know, help him out. You know, we were in the studio mixing Mick's record at Right Track. Ed Stason was the mix engineer at the time. And Dougie was like, what should I do? I was like, nobody's here in the studio on the weekend. Come in here and do something with me. I'm not Mick Jagger. You are. You know, so, but he listened to what I said, and I gave him a little bit of encouragement to know how to deal with the New York City musician that I was very, I was a translator. You know, you're not going to get your ass whooped. It's going to be all right. You're not going to body slam you if the shit. Let's go in the studio and do some stuff with him. So that's what kind of went down a little bit like that. And then at the same time, Keith was involved. We all knew, it was the same circle of people. We all kind of knew these circle of fifths people that were all involved in the downtown New York community and stuff. And it was circling around these same similar names. So they did the record. I helped co-sign to Mick to, you know, go in and do that. And he cut a couple of singles with them. And then, you know, they did the album. It took Mick about a year to shop that record around. It didn't happen like that. It took a while. Mm-hmm. Keith was involved doing some remixes and stuff like that because Vern is a huge Keith LeBlanc fan. When Keith did Malcolm X No Sellout, that was a big turning point in hip-hop, as far as I'm concerned. Sonically, you know, post the message around this same caliber of really conscious stuff. Vernon was working for the Village Voice, and he was conscious of what was going on, so he always had his ear there. We were mates, so I was happy to help him out. To see that he's got the eye and the ear of somebody that's asking about something. I'm like, of course, hell yeah. I mean, we had Tacky, but I'm like, you know, you don't want to do nothing with Tacky, Mick. Maybe just come and play some harmonica with us. I was just too
Yeah, that was
loud.
Funny. He brought,
as far as that's
he brought, Mick came to a
Tacky. You go back over there and do that other stuff.
And he brought him in the dressing room, and this kid with him, and we had Mark Stewart with us.
Oh,
it was
real
like,
industrial. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty out there industrial English ranter, and Adrian Sherwood. He got a load of them, and Doug says, what can you do Satisfaction? And Mick,
But that was the circle. That was what was going on. It was kind of vibing. So Living Color starts to do their thing, rise to the occasion. And it's, you know, we ended up doing some stuff with them. It's kind of like family. You know, we're all looking after each other. The Tackhead crew and Living Color crew, they come to Europe. We're over there looking after them and vice versa. So we all became mates and friends, and it just stayed.
Yeah, it's still like that.
Still like that. You know, it's still like that. So
when Muzz left, it was natural progression for you to help him out, man.
Well, you know, it was, what's your mates are for, right? You know what I mean? Everybody, you try to, you know, step up to help your mates out when you're asked, and here we are. We're all in Living Color. You too.
Yeah.
We are Living Color.
Maybe a little less on this end of the camera. I don't know.
If you put the album in front of your face, it looks really good with the microphone like that. There you go.
That's like that.
You got to have a laughing life, Bob.
And that's I would bet that that's a first pressing, 1988. I guarantee you, this was one of the first that came out. So I know you're not collecting anything on this one, but I'm just telling you.
Memories I collect.
There you go. And I understand because I actually do an occasional bit of research. Living Color is back out again, got a new album, and you're touring in March and April, UK and US, is that right?
For clarity, we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of Vivid.
Okay.
And the fact that everybody's able to, you know, be here today to celebrate that. And that's going to take place between starting off in the UK and in America. and probably even as well, Muzzy will probably join us in a couple of key cities to kind of like keep stuff in we do our little mini Stones things, you know, bring Bill Wyman back out, make sure that he's got a little bit of, all right, darling, yeah, let's do this.
That's nice, man.
But, you know, just kind of like, you know, because we can, you know what I mean? And like in the reality of how you do things in life and in family, you know, the only thing that stops you from doing something is yourself. And if you have something that's going on where you, you know, where you look at bands and other things that goes on, there's so much drama and all this other shit stuff that's all cool. But none of us are going to be as big as One Direction, so try and make it happen.
All right, one more question about Living Color. We'll move on from that. So the thing I wondered is Living Color had this incredible sound. It's very, very hard rock, very kind of metal for the time. The only thing about it was you could get a hard rock, heavy metal fan, be listening to it, and then would the jaw would drop when he saw that this was an African-American band. And I got to ask you, do you think over time that held that band back from being, you know, keeping the continuity year after year and staying together and playing? Did it not become a bigger band just for that reason? Was it a race issue, I guess?
Well, two sides to that question. I mean, the first side is, you know, the shock and awe of seeing any Negroidals up there playing rock and roll has always been... That hasn't changed. You know, when Abraham Lincoln so-called freed the slaves, he ain't freed the slaves in the music business, number one. We're talking about the 80s, you know, Reagan, post-Gorbachev, all these different things. A lot of things were still very, very happening. George Wallace was probably still alive back then. God only knows what was going on. Anyway, there's a lot of things that were happening, and the record industry was the record industry. Hip-hop helped break a hole in that kind of stuff, in a sense of freedom. But, you know, but Living Color was hope. Living Color was like, you know, was the reflection of all the other artists that came before us. So, you know, Living Color was like a real big band that enjoyed all kinds of music. And, but being black, you get stereotyped in this world, in this planet, you know, and that's where things can turn and take a twist. And then the idea of being able to find identity in a world that wants to categorize you from what they see in your skin as not from what they hear in the music. So it became a category of like, okay, Living Color will be okay, but there's certain places where, you know, in a period where it was like, okay, you accept it, okay, oh, things aren't going really good. Let's build the wall right back up and make sure no more Living Colors are going to get through until the next time. So it's like Living Color broke a barrier. At that same time, let's look at what was going on. You had Lenny Kravitz that was happening. You had a few different artists that were doing stuff. You had King's X. I can go down the list. You know, you had The Velt. You know, a lot of different bands that were doing stuff. And it was, and some cats broke through. Lenny broke through. Living Color broke through at the same time. And you had Fishbone. Mm-hmm. You had Bad Brains, which is really the originators of all the, you know, which was really kind of like the Living Color worship Bad Brains kind of like stuff. So you had that. You had 24/7 Spies. You had a lot of different bands that were doing stuff like Melvin Gibbs Band, you know. But, you know, there were other bands and many before. Living Color was able to get the nod from somebody that was, you know, very famous like Mick Jagger. They were able to get them signed to a major label at that time. Through in the Walter Yetnikoff era, in the Tommy Mottola eras, when you're dealing with like these eras of what was going on in the industry. Now, saying all of that, as you know, Living Color was able to have the, you know, there's no denying about the music and the art of what was going on. What it was able to get a hall pass at that time because of Mick Jagger and because of the face of the other people that were like, yeah, Living Color. You know what I mean? You know, like that, and being able to go, it's cool. Don't change your channel. It's 3-4 Negroes. You've seen them before. All right. Don't change your channel right now. You know what I mean? So it was shock and awe. You hear the music first. You just know Corey is looking like, you know, Axl Rose or some shit like that.
Right.
You just know it till you see Corey Glover. And then you see, you know, and then you try to cut, and then you say, oh, he's a black man. Or you hear Ron's guitar playing, you go, that cannot be, that's, you know, it's just they can't put it together. So at the same time, that shock and awe helped create a vibe and a buzz with all the, everything started to align up.
Yeah,
it was the alignment.
Living Color.
You know?
I think it helped Living Color being an all-black rock band, you know, because it was the first of its kind. Mm-hmm. And as soon as
the big companies smelled money behind it, they pushed it. And I think they definitely blazed the trail. You know, it was the right time with MTV, the right time with the music industry. Everything was right there.
And then I mean, come on, let's look at what was before. There's so many bands before that. The Bar-K's, P-Funk. Mm-hmm. I mean, so Living Color had a great ensemble and a great template that was already set up to work off of. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, and that, I think that needs to be always stated when Living Color is mentioned. You know, it did not start with Living Color. It started even, you know, from Little Richard, even before and on and before, from the blues artists. It's just that,
Ike Turner,
like Pete said, and Adam saying, at that time was the right time for that alignment to happen. And it did. But what happened was, to add on the second side of that coin, is once the things started to go and start to play out, you know, it's too much too fast sometimes. When you go from being an avant-garde under, you know, New York City band, downtown band, to hitting it, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 you know, you have to have enough of the right people and components in place to be able to orchestrate your schedule, your career, and the things and the thoughts that might be going on. So usually what happens is, which would happen with Living Color, it was Vernon decided to break the band up. And based on whatever was going on in his life at that particular time, or how he saw that, you know, and basically, so it ended abruptly, but with the notes still resonated. So it's like all of a sudden, it's like somebody's stopping a song with a big reverb chamber on. And the reverb's still going just endless, you know, so that kind of, and then when that reverb, when the last note hit and the reverb's playing, they built another wall up. They put, you understand what I'm saying? The music industry was able to get their, they were able to go, oh, really? You Negroes are finished now. Get that wall up. Let me keep my boys there.
Right.
They got the Sandy Committee to come and help build another wall up.
And sadly, we're laughing, but we all know that it's basically true. It's just.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. And now what we have left? The Roots, you know, and stuff like that. So you have different bands. And it's just the whole art, the whole industry, the art, from where we came from, us, this generation, this Bronx boy. I mean, we all came up from the same, we all ate and played at the same clubs. Mm-hmm. No matter what music we were doing, we're all playing in the city. Yeah. We're living on, sleeping on floors, man, waking up with a rat in your face or some shit like that. You know what I mean? We really were there. It's no, nothing given to us. There's no silver spoon at all.
Right.
And we say it from the beauty of Connecticut now or whatever. But, you know, the reality of it is it was real. It was true. And our story is one in a million that exists all over this universe.
That's right.
You know, I look at us as being blessed to be here now to talk to you, Bob, in a situation in the day and age. We could be online on an iPad. We're here. Keith's here. We're kicking it, going back and forth and doing stuff. Technology work, technology delivers. And I think in all this being said and done, a band like Living Color has been one of those bands that has been able to, you know, live its story out. And find ways how to be friends and find ways how to keep our community, be a part of what our community is all about. So we're happy to be able to be here right now. Adam, hangs with Vernon, Will's doing stuff. We all, you know, we all kick it as friends and family. And we just disguise ourselves through the name of a band.
Well, and let me continue that theme for just a second in kind of the opposite direction. Keith, I was reading about how, you know, when you were playing in the Sugar Hill rhythm section, people didn't believe that you were actually part of it. That it didn't connect for some people that the drummer was the white guy.
You mean he's white?
I don't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, go ahead.
Last name. No, in the early days, it was like that. And, you know, you know, people would get upset, so I would tell them I was a bus driver, something that they could accept, and which became interesting. And then I didn't really have to deal with anything like that for years, and then until I moved to England. Then every once in a while, I'd meet a reggae artist that would kind of like, oh, I don't know whether he can, you know. So, or if they heard me play, you know, they'd realize it wasn't me. They'd think it wasn't me. It might happen a few times like that, but not much anymore. No one cares, you know, as long as they can wiggle.
There we go. Got the wiggle going on. Well, you were talking about, you guys, Doug, you were talking about Mick Jagger before, and I was, as Keith was talking about that, I was thinking about Keith Richards' biography, Life, and he talked about this period of time. I'm thinking it was the 70s, and he was in, was it the Bahamas? I'm trying to remember where he went. And
probably Compass Point in the Bahamas.
Thank you. Yeah, and he talked a lot about wondering if he would be accepted. You know, I mean, he's Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones, but, you know, are the black musicians that are going to accept him? And it became completely engulfing in his career and his music. And I think his experience there was just that it really changed the course of things for him.
Well, probably did. If I remember right, Keith went to Jamaica, actually, because he had a gaff in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys were recording at Compass Point Studios in the Bahamas, probably because it had the best humidifier in the Caribbean at the time to keep the gear alive. Quite honestly, it was right next to the beach. It had great food and the Sunday jam and stuff like that. But he pretty much resided and had a gaff in Jamaica, and he befriended Peter Tosh.
Right.
And so he was, you know, he was in that whole community and stuff like that. He kind of looked after him. And plus, you know, those guys, you know, Stones and those kiddies, Mick and those guys, they all, you know, like they came up listening to yard music. They listened to all, you know, the West Indian movement that was going on when they were lads. Mm-hmm. They were the ones that had the biggest sound systems. And shit wasn't coming from nobody else bigger than them. I don't care who had the dough, whatever. Those Jamaican dudes had it lit.
Yeah, because when we first went over to England, it was shocking. Because the first guy we worked with when we went over there was a reggae producer. And the frequencies they were using and the reggae music we heard, you didn't hear stuff like that in the States. We were not ready for that.
We weren't ready for it.
Took our heads off at first.
So I'm quite sure that was, you know, Keith and them, they grew up, they knew those songs. You know, it's kind of like they shared a common theme. You know what that was? Blues and R&B music from America.
Yeah.
That's what they share. They share. They would. Don't get it twisted. Now, don't. Bob Marley would put that tight suit on and do them Temptation steps or something like that. You know what I mean? So, like, if you think about it, that was what was happening. They were listening to the blues artists. They were listening to the country western artists. You know what I mean? So it was that audience might have been more liberal than our audience. We were listening to James Brown. We were listening to King Curtis. You know, we're listening to certain twists on stuff, things that you know, country western music might have been something that we saw on TV, but we were so familiar with it that it was part of our, you know, we were just around it all the time. But like, yo, man, you know, James Brown sliding across the stage real fast with one foot is quite stimulating when you're a kid and you see it live. So we were more attracted to that, or seeing Hendrix, or seeing Santana. You know, and from what we learned in our experience of being in the UK, they picked up, in all the colonies, Jamaica, the Bahamas, they picked up on these themes that we may have not have been so deeply. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, and then you kind of see the similarities of what the Jamaicans were listening to and what the Englishman was listening to. Listening to the same kind of things.
And the English, they're in a good spot to collect things from all over the world. And, when I lived in England for a long time, I met some incredible musicians and just was exposed to music from other parts of the world that I never would have got exposed to here in the States. So it is a different type of thing, and there is a big West Indian influx, a big Indian influx there too of music as well, and Cuban, you know, a lot of things that were kept from coming in the States, you know,
it's there.
So,
well, let's give credit where credit is due, Keith. The English have been collecting things from around the world for centuries.
Absolutely, it's all in the British Museum.
Yeah.
It's all in the British Museum, right off the line.
Right. Unless they have to give it back.
Especially taxed.
Tax, yes. Well, so let's wrap up here, because we've wound up eating into a big chunk of your studio time, and which has been, it's been wonderful spending time with you guys and seeing you play.
Thanks, Bob.
I got to ask Keith and Doug, what do you have planned for Adam's birthday next week? It's the 19th.
Yep. Oh!
I only found out about his birthday when I got here today, so the wheels are turning.
Well, now the wheels are turning. Now we realize what's happening. You know, this is something that's
going to answer your questions. We don't know yet.
But it'll be something for Bob's Talk Radio next time we talk.
Maybe live from Miami Beach during the moment.
We'll call you.
We'll call you, maybe you can come check it out and see, and you can see for yourself and let the world see that, this is what we've done to Adam.
That would be great. Do you, Adam, do you know how I remember it, actually? It's because it's the same day as my mother's birthday.
Oh, okay. I think we spoke about that.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I got it all up here. So, so folks, listen. You can see Adam Falcon, Keith LeBlanc, and Doug Wimbush performing together on January 19th during Art Deco Weekend in Miami Beach. They'll also be there for all 3 days, January 18th to 20th. You can go to artdecoweekend.com for all the details. Guys, we want to give out a website for each of you. Do you want to, you know, plug something individually?
Well, you can go to adamfalcon.com. And quite naturally, all the other social networks that's associated with that, I don't have to go through. Everybody knows the drill by now. You know, Facebook, Twitter, the whole nine. But adamfalcon.com.
All right.
YouTube, hold it.
Blankrecords.com.
Blank, B-L-A-N-C, records.com.
Yes, B-L-A-N-C, records.com.
All right.
Yep, you can go to wimbash.com or dougwimbish.com. Wimbash. One of those two, you'll find hot sauce.
Yeah,
and government cheese.
And if you go to my website, you can download my whole sample library for free. So.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
And let me throw in one more, livingcolor.com.
That's it. Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, for the boys.
That's where the dates are.
Tackhead.com.
Is there still tackhead.com?
Hey, Bob, do you have a does the talk radio have a Facebook page where if we do get a cake video of Adam, we could shoot it up there?
Absolutely. I'll pass that on to Dave. I'll make sure he has all that information.
Brilliant.
All right. Well, listen, Doug Wimbush, first of all, thank you for letting us into your home. That was wonderful.
You're welcome.
Keith, Adam, and Jamie and Diane in the back helping us on the technical side. Thank you guys so much. This was wonderful. I really enjoyed it, and I'm sure people are going to have a great time seeing you down in Miami next week. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Appreciate it.
Cheers, mate.
Bye-bye.
All right. You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media Radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at Stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's Stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening.